disruption zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
I don't mean to say that I keep topping myself with these great podcasts, but this is another one of my favorite ever. Congressman Thomas Massie, and we talked about a bunch of things. We talked about growing up in mobile homes. We talked about coronavirus and the big myths of coronavirus, and pardoning Edward Snowden, and whether or not we think Snowden did the right thing. It was a fascinating conversation with a lot of laughter and a lot of fun stuff. But we started it all off by talking about trails in the wilderness in Kentucky. So let's just join the conversation, myself and Congressman Thomas Massie on the Disruption Zone.
Got the Jenny Wiley Trail that goes through here.
How long is the Jenny Wiley
Although, trail? Honestly, we might have the head of the Sheltowee Trail, too. Wiley goes down to the Jenny Wiley Park, State Park.
Okay.
And it starts near Portsmouth, Ohio.
Okay, like right
Anyways,
up the river.
It goes on my farm.
Does it really?
And it's an unofficial thing. Like they never. It's one of those things where they never got all the right permissions.
Oh.
And so it kind of fell apart.
By the way, I'm rolling. So. so you just let it go through your farm because you don't want to hinder people that are.
I've never stopped anybody on the Jenny Wiley. It brushes the edge of my trail.
Yeah.
Or the trail brushes.
How
the
many
edge
acres
of my farm.
Do you have?
That's not a real polite question to ask.
Really?
I think it's like saying, how much money do you have in the bank?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude. How big is your farm? I'm asking another way.
There's a saying in Appalachia, if you can see the smoke from your neighbor's chimney, it's time to move.
Yeah. Okay. So it's big enough then.
It's big enough to be self-sufficient and provide food for other people.
Fantastic.
So most of it's hillside. I actually sequester more CO2 than anybody in Congress. That's the other thing people
don't
know.
How do you do that?
Okay. Well, with about 1,400 acres of trees.
Okay. So everything that you're creating in terms of that, your trees are eating it back up.
Yeah.
See, now you just told me how big your farm is. So
I didn't. Well, it doesn't all have trees.
Oh, okay, my bad. we're sneaking around each other here. My wife and I are going to Montana in September, and we're going to look at property up there. And we're going to start by like maybe just putting like a tiny house on it until we scrape together enough funding to do something similar to what you've done only there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have no idea how to farm, but I want a self-sufficient place that can go off the grid at the snap of a finger.
When my wife and I moved back to Kentucky, where we're both from, I wanted to do a log cabin.
Yeah.
And she was a lot smarter than me. She was like, that'll take forever, and we need a place to live.
Right.
She went to the mobile home outlet lot.
Okay.
And bought a double wide, the floor model, not a brand new one. Like, this is the one Sweet. That people have been walking through for a year or two.
Right.
So we lived, and so we got the mobile home, brought it back, set it up. It took a week to set it up. We're living in it within a week. And if we ever want to get rid of it, we just take it away.
Right.
It was about $32,000.
Yeah.
I'm not saying to spend a lot on a mobile home.
Right.
But it's less than what some people pay for a car.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was we got her brother to build a porch on it, so it looked like a house. And we were only going to stay there when we visited.
Right.
But then we end up living in it, and we started building our house, and we ended up living in it for several years, and it was 900 square feet. We had four children in a 900 square foot mobile home.
That's
and
awesome.
Actually, it was some close living. It was basically Eastern Kentucky's version of a tiny home.
Yeah. Well, you had twice the space I had growing up because I lived in a single wide trailer growing up.
I bet it was longer than this one, though.
It was pretty long.
Yeah, this was a short one.
Funny story. So, because you know my parents are missionaries on the American Indian Field. And we had just moved out there. And the trailer that we rented from the guy that my dad was working with, it sat on a hill. But for some reason, when they set it up, instead of setting it up sideways on the hill, mm-hmm. you know, to make it easier to level, they set it up straight out from the hill. So on one end, it sat on the ground. And on the other end, it sat on like almost 5 feet of blocks.
Nice.
There was no underpinning. So we had open range out there. Cows just roam wherever. Mm-hmm. And when we first moved into the house, I was like eight and I was scared of the dark. And the people that the daughter of the people that were the landlords told me there was like red stains on the wall in the room my parents put me in. And she was like, so-and-so killed themselves there, which was a true story. So I got like terrified and I would have nightmares at night. And so I was on the end that was on the ground and my parents' bedroom was on the end that was up on the blocks. And so whenever anybody walked through the trailer, it would like rattle the whole trailer, right? Like,
right.
So my parents got used to me right after bedtime walking the whole length of the trailer to come tell my mom to come pray with me so I would be able to fall asleep. This was every night like routine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so every night right after bed, they'd feel that vibration, here I come. Well, one night this happened, same normal time. Here comes the vibration. It's walking down the trailer, comes down the hallway towards my mom and dad's bedroom. The bedroom door is open. They always left it open. But there's nobody there. They look up. There's nobody in the doorway. It comes in the room, walking through the room. There's nobody there. Walks right up to the bed, then slides underneath the bed. And my mom is like, my mom and dad are both sitting straight up in bed because they were expecting me and it's not me. And my dad, in his skivvies, just gets up and leaves my mom sitting there by herself with whatever's underneath the bed. The thing was, my dad knew because he had lived there for a few months before we moved out there with him. He knew what it was. It was a cow that had scraped down the side, scratching its back down the side of it. And then as it got to my mom and dad's bedroom, it slid underneath. So it literally sounded like it was me walking down the hall, but it was a cow outside.
Wow. I bet it actually shook the trailer.
It did. Yeah, it did. It was crazy. So I know you weren't expecting a story like that to start off a podcast, but so
what I remember is there were no return vents from the air conditioner on the mobile home.
Oh.
So the doors are about 3 inches off the bottom of the floor.
Right. All trailers are, yeah.
Yeah, and it might make sense to do that in a tiny home. It might just be an efficiency thing.
Right.
If they've already figured out that's the cheapest way to do it in a mobile home. But our kids, when we first moved in, they were like toddlers, and they thought they could crawl under those doors. And they would like stick both arms through. They would stick both legs through and then try to get their hips through. They get part of their head just barely in. And it was hilarious. They were always trying to get from one room to the next by going under
that's
the door.
That's hilarious. Do you guys still have the trailer?
We do.
Okay.
And so we lease part of our farm to deer hunters every year. And the funny thing is the guy who leases it, he calls it the lodge.
Yeah.
And my wife calls it the double lodge
because it's
a double wide.
That's awesome. But,
and so it's full of deer heads and bunk beds
right now. That's awesome. And that's perfect because that's beautiful country where you live too. I mean, it's Kentucky at its best.
I wouldn't mind moving back in that mobile home. It was some of the quietest, most peaceful living we had. It was up a holler.
Right.
And we lived there for a while without a telephone.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But while we were waiting for them to run the telephone service, you got to understand how the people lived 100 years ago because
right.
you'd just be sitting there and a car would roll up in your driveway and you'd be like, well, who's that?
Right.
And they park the car and get out, and you're like, wonder who that is. And they walk up, and it'd be some family or maybe just somebody that need to talk to you about some business.
Right.
And they just roll up in your yard.
That's hilarious. That sounds like my mama and papa. They'd be sitting on their porch. Well, who's that? That's so Kentucky. I love it. So how did you live in that, though? Because your house is off the grid now. So did you run power to it?
We had electric. Water? Yeah, we had electric. We had city water.
Okay.
It was actually the one thing that – so my wife was not all in at the beginning for a log cabin off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
So we got city water because she had grown up with well water.
Right.
And it had sulfur in it. And
right, yeah, nasty.
Iron. And so she wanted some of that city water.
Right.
By the way, we both went to MIT. Like, it's not – this was self-deprivation. We right. didn't have to live this way. But we right. were – living by modest means, and our kids are better for it.
Right.
So she wanted the city water and the city electric, and so we lost 2 microwaves and 3 refrigerators to brownouts from the grid.
Wow.
And then the city water, it would clog up a hot water heater within 3 years. It
right.
was really hard water.
It's a limestone.
Lots of calcium. Well, they add stuff in it to yeah. precipitate other stuff, and then it just accumulates. So living that way was enough to convince her, hey, well, I told her, I said, we're going to drill a well, and I don't care if I have to build a refinery in the basement. We will create our own clean water because I can do a better job than whatever they're doing down there in the town.
Right.
And she was like, okay, I'm up for that.
How do you filter your water?
Oh, it's different for everybody. Right. So we dug a well. We didn't drill a well. We dug a well. So it comes okay. from a spring.
Okay. Oh, I bet it tastes so good.
It's so good.
Dude, there's a spring down by when I was in college at Asbury. We'd go down to the river, Lock 9, I think it was. And there was a cave that came out down there at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a spring that they just had a little pipe sticking out of the limestone coming right out of the cliffside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was so clean. It was so cold. It was ice mm-hmm. cold coming out of those rocks. Dude, it had almost a sweet taste to it, but like mm-hmm. it was the most thirst-quenching water I've ever had in my life.
That was the bat guano.
Is that what it was?
Tasting. Okay. Yeah, the saltpeter. No,
right.
I'm just kidding. Like, I've been in some caves. I think I'll take mine straight out
no,
of the
this,
ground.
This wasn't but, coming out of the
oh,
cave.
Oh, okay.
It was next to the cave, but it was okay. a limestone spring that had been established
oh,
probably 100 years ago, and
yeah.
they had a pipe coming out. It wasn't coming from the cave. It was coming from beside the cave, but I mean, it was delicious.
So there were 2 things. So I had the water tested. I dug this well. I used my backhoe. Then I borrowed a friend's jackhammer when I hit bedrock and hit water. It's a little spring. Pump it up to the house. Got it tested. It has 2 deficiencies. It has iron in it, but it's ferric iron, not ferrous iron, which means you don't need a water softener to take it out. You can use
oh, okay.
this non-degrading medium that just filters it out, and then you backwash it. It's not one of those complicated filters. And then the other thing is the pH actually corrodes the copper pipes. It's like too soft and just enough that it would leave this blue ring around the bathtub
okay.
or around the sinks. And this was a problem because my oldest daughter, she was going to get school pictures one day, and she got up and she had green hair because so we I fixed that using CaCO3, I think it's calcium carbonate. It's basically chips of marble.
Okay.
And so I run the water through a filter that takes out the iron, and then I run it through calcium carbonate, which neutralizes the pH.
And you built all this yourself?
Yeah, it's in the basement.
So you built your own water filter system, and you have pure, clean water coming right out of the ground in Kentucky?
Yes.
And then what about plumbing? How do you deal with that? Is it septic or?
Septic tank.
So you have like normal house plumbing. It's just not on the grid.
That's correct.
Okay.
Although I did 2 sets of plumbing in my house because I wanted to reuse the gray water for like a garden.
Oh, okay.
And so I have 2 sets of pipes in the house. Now, I ultimately never implemented the garden with the gray water. So the gray water, I just route it all together and it goes to the septic tank now.
Okay. All right. But you could separate it if you ever wanted to do that again.
Yep.
And then, so you have, and I know you built your Tesla wall. We did a whole podcast with you on that, which I highly recommend people go back and search our archives. It's one of the first ones we did. And it's fascinating because you detailed like your, how you built your own Tesla wall to power your house. Mm-hmm. But do you have enough power in like a summer like this one to have air conditioning?
We have been running our air conditioning 24/7.
Really?
Yes. It's
and
amazing.
All solar?
All solar.
Wow.
For 11 years, we basically turned, for the first 11 years, we turned the air conditioner off at night and just sweated through it.
Oh, I couldn't do that. I can't sleep at night like that.
Because the lead acid batteries really weren't up to the challenge.
Right.
And they're so expensive, the depreciation on them.
Right.
And, but then when I got the battery out of the wrecked Model S and rewired it, so it's got the capacity of 6 Tesla Powerwalls, we have enough power to run air conditioning 24/7.
Wow.
And in the daytime, we take the house down cooler.
Right.
So it can coast up a little bit at night. So
right.
we're not
so what
totally
do you, what temperature do you set it on?
Oh, in the daytime, we run it down to 68.
Okay. So you're freaking rocking it then. That's and you're doing all this with solar power.
Yes. And then at night, we'll let it float up to 74 or 76 maybe.
I put mine on 66 at night. But if you put a fan in your bedroom.
Oh, in our bedroom. No, it's in the 60s.
Oh, right? Okay. So you have like a zone. It's like, yeah, that's smart. That's
the kids, freaking awesome. The kids don't know this, but the duct going to our bedroom is 3 times bigger than the duct that went to their rooms.
That's hilarious. I love it. So welcome back to the podcast. I always love talking to you. We always get in the most interesting conversations. I want to talk about the fact that you and your wife both tested for antibodies of COVID. How'd that happen?
Well, so my colleague Louis Gohmert got diagnosed with COVID in Congress.
Right.
And so I thought, well, I'll spend some time around Louis. Let me go get the test for COVID. And they said, well, we don't consider you a high priority. You're going to have to wait a couple days.
You are a nuisance to Congress. So.
Yes, right.
Let's put you at the back of the line.
Right. And so they put me at the back of the line, and I said, you know, I'd like to get the antibody test as well. I think I might have had this in January. And I told them all the sickness that I had in January, and they said, all right, well, you can get that test done today. So I went and got the test done. And they said, I said, how long does the test take? And they said, well, 3 to 5 days if you get a negative result, but 7 to 10 for a positive result. And I said, why is that? And they said, well, if you get a positive result, we test it again for the titer level. So we know how much of the antibodies you have.
Right.
So on the 7th, by the way, I tested negative for COVID, thankfully, and which I got those results the day I took the test. And then on the 7th day, I was like, wow, it's been 7 days and they haven't responded. Maybe I've got the antibodies. So
right.
the doctor called me up and said, you've got the antibodies. And they said, can you send me the lab report? And so they FedExed it. So I got that the next day. And it showed my titer level is 960. And low titers would be considered like 80 or 160.
Okay.
And 320 is considered a good immune response. So I had 3 times
a good immune
response. A good immune response.
But what's interesting about this is that this is 6 months later after you believe you had it.
Yeah, 7 months later.
Because there's all these people are out, oh, it doesn't last.
I think there's some great lies out there that will eventually be found to be lies, and the people who said them will never be held accountable.
Right. What do you think are the biggest lies about COVID? Hold on. We didn't finish the story. Your wife also tested positive for antibodies, so you both had it in January, you think.
So this is the thing. My wife decided to get tested. She used – it cost $50 to get a test here locally. You can just walk into LabCorp, and it's a chain. It's like, I need some lab work.
Right.
They're like, give us cash.
Okay.
And test is $40. Do you have a doctor's referral? No. Well, we've got an online doctor who will refer you for $10. Okay. So
sweet.
So for $50, she got the test. And what we had decided was, see, I told everybody when I got the positive results for the antibodies, I said, you know what? I had this from January 3rd to January 7th. I even went to the doctor. I was that sick. I never go to the doctor.
Right.
I was so sick I went to the doctor. And by never, I mean maybe once every 15 years.
Right.
Okay. So I went to the doctor because I was that sick. I had no energy. I laid on the couch. This was before we knew COVID was
right.
a thing.
Yeah, nobody even knew it was a thing at the point.
I laid on the couch for 4 days because whatever it was, I didn't want to give it to my wife.
Right.
And I had no energy. I slept most of the day. I just laid there, and I had a fever that came and went, and I had a sore throat.
Right.
And so I went to the doctor. They tested me for strep, and the nurse practitioner said, I was like, I really want that shot. She's like, well, maybe there's a slight positive on this strip. It's like some kind of test strip. So
right.
She's like, let me go get the doctor. So the doctor who I know comes in, and he looks at it, and he's like, well, do you want the shot? I said, give me the shot. Doc, give me the shot. They gave me a Rocephin shot, and they gave me loratadine, which is an antihistamine. That's the generic version of Claritin to clear up the drainage.
Right.
Within 4 hours, I felt 10 times better.
Really?
Now.
So, and you haven't been sick since. So
I haven't had a sniffle since. So I thought, okay, I had it then.
Right.
And then, but by the way, my wife got sick with milder versions of all those symptoms 1 week after I was sick.
Really?
And so I thought, well, you know, if we get her tested and she's got the antibodies, that's, by the way, the only time she's been sick too.
Right.
Then that lends more credence to the fact we had this in January. She got tested. Sure enough, she has the antibodies. So we're getting our daughter tested because our daughter got sick a week after my wife got sick.
Right. Which is all right in line with what they say, how this thing transmits.
Yes. And coughed for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And so if she has the antibodies, I'm guaranteeing you. So let's get to the biggest lies about COVID.
Yeah.
That patient zero was some dude in Washington State, you know, like at the end of January or February.
Right. No, there, it clearly was here in December.
Leland, there were 100 patient zeros at least. There are thousands of people coming from China every day.
Right.
Even when Trump shut the airport down from China, the airlines, and they were quarantining flights from China and testing them, I had a person who called me up. He's a business guy, flies around the world. He said, you do know the Chinese are flying into Africa, switching planes, and coming to the United States. Like, I just saw it.
Even when they knew
that
they were spreading COVID.
Because, you know, there's no way a president can stop flights from Africa.
Right.
Politically incorrect.
Right, right, right. Yeah, exactly.
So, and the Chinese knew that. So if you were from China and you need to get to the United States, you just route through Africa. So anyways, there were thousands of flights. And by the way, by the time Trump shut it down, there were already, I'm willing to bet, 1,000 people here with it. Maybe
sure.
Tens of thousands.
Sure, sure.
Maybe hundreds of thousands. Because we also get like a million packages a day from China, right?
Right.
I was ordering, by the way, I was ordering stuff via DHL overnight air direct from the factory from China in the Hubei province in November and December for my chicken tractor project.
Right.
And like when they started talking about where this outbreak was in China, I literally tracked down the factory where I was ordering this stuff from, and I was like, so it was here sooner. I think this is going to show up. I think the Republicans and the Democrats have an interest in telling you it wasn't here in
right.
December and January, and here's why they will tell you that. By the way, I think I probably contracted it on my flight back from D.C. on December 19th.
Right.
That's when I didn't have a lot of contact other than with a son who came in from Boston who subsequently got very sick in January. He flew to Germany and Spain after we saw him, and he got very sick in Germany and Spain. He's going to get the test. But I think it was here sooner, and the Republicans don't want to admit to that because they're trying to tell you what Trump did was effective.
Right.
When he shut down the borders in like February.
Right, right, right.
And then Nancy Pelosi was walking around Chinatown in San Francisco.
Right, right.
Remember?
Oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's
right.
fine. Yeah.
In like February.
And now she's blaming the virus on Trump.
Yes. And said I was going to get everybody killed when I made him come to Congress.
Right, right.
And So anyways, neither party has any interest in letting the truth get out, which is that this virus was here December and January in the United States. Okay, the other thing is these antibodies. If I had it in January, which I mean, you can never be certain about anything, but I'm almost certain about that. I got tested for the antibodies 7 months later, and I've got 3 times the titer level that would be required to be a valid or a viable plasma donor for convalescent plasma.
Wow.
So I think they last a long time. And my wife also, you know, she just got tested in August. So that's like almost 7 months because she got a little bit after I did.
Right.
Well, I think these antibodies, and then also there are other T cells. So all that stuff's coming out. That's the other big lie about COVID. I think the other falsehood is that somehow the masks are more important than washing your hands. I think if you look in nursing homes where this spreads, people are the staff are wearing masks, but I believe the staff are spreading it to the patients because they're wearing gloves and handling trays and going from one room to the next.
Right.
And in Norway, I have a friend in Norway who says they don't wear masks there, but there's a hand washing station on every corner.
Yeah.
Huh. They just religiously wash their hands.
Do you think the other misinformation we're getting about COVID is the way you can treat it? Because what you're saying, you got that shot that would have been for strep throat, and within 4 hours you were feeling better. It seems to me that with the exception of certain people in certain categories that are specifically vulnerable to certain aspects of this virus, that for the most part, it really isn't that much different than treating the flu or a massive cold.
Well, you know, it was a strong antibiotic that I received, which would be, it's kind of like a stronger version of the Z-Pak. It's not erythromycin, but it's what you would take for the same sort of thing. That may have treated some secondary infection that I got as a result of COVID.
Right.
You know, who knows what happened, but I'm telling by the way, I also was on the cold therapy zinc tablets there at the beginning of catching it, because I always take those if I feel like I'm catching a cold, because I think it does help. So I'm just telling everybody that it's just one piece of the puzzle.
Right.
I'm not saying go out and get a Rocephrin shot and it's going to cure COVID. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's what I took. We didn't know what the heck I had, and I felt better almost instantly.
Right.
Now, antibiotics have that effect. I've had calves that are sick, and I know if you give a calf a shot of antibiotic, it miraculously recovers and then sometimes dies the next day.
Right.
Because there's some energy that comes, they get like this boost of energy. And I was thinking when I got the shot, am I like one of those calves that like you think you've cured because there's some kind of other effect going on here, some euphoric energy effect from the antibiotic. But no, I think maybe it was a secondary complication, but whatever it was, and it could have just been a causal. It could have been just two things happened at the same time, and related them, and they weren't related.
So here's another interesting thing. This just popped up on Fox News. They have a new study out of an Israeli hospital on coronavirus. The odds of catching coronavirus on a plane, relatively small. According to the study, they had a plane that actually had 102 researchers on it. Unbeknownst to 7 of them, they were positive for coronavirus. They didn't know they had come into contact with it until after they landed, when they were told to test. So they immediately decided to make this into sort of a real life survey. So they had 7 that were positive on the flight. It was a 4.5 hour flight. Out of the people, there were 78 people on the flight. 7 of them had been positive prior to getting on the flight, right? Only 2 more caught it during a 4.5 hour flight.
Well,
And I guess the reason I bring that up is if you can sit in a plane, which is a sardine can, with 7 people who have it that can't be more than 100 feet away from you for 4.5 hours, you can vote in person. You can go to the store. We can reopen the economy. We should probably wear masks, but we can reopen the economy.
Well, there's another thing that study might be showing, and I don't know how they correct for this.
Sure.
But it's reasonable to expect that symptomatic carriers have a higher viral load,
right,
and therefore can spread it more quickly and easily than asymptomatic.
Yeah.
Because I think that's another – I think the degree to which asymptomatic people spread it has been overstated.
Right.
For instance, Senator Rand Paul was diagnosed with COVID. He was asymptomatic. He had the antibodies, and I followed up with him, and I said, did you give it to your wife or your son? Cause, you know, he's got three sons, but one of them still, you know, they interact with a lot at home. Yeah. And he said, nope, Kelly never got it, and my son never got it.
Huh.
And, I mean, it's hard to believe that a husband can't give it to their wife.
Right.
Unless you're separated.
Right.
But, which is, you know, why when my wife got it, it was surprising but not surprising.
Right.
My wife's like, look, if you had COVID, there's no way I don't have COVID.
Right.
And I said, I think you're right. And she said, and also, if you had it in January, that's when I had it. Because that's the only time. What are the odds we were both asymptomatic?
Yeah.
By the way, when everything was on lockdown and nobody was going to work and everybody was scared and any company that could was letting people work from home, my daughter and her fiance stayed with us for like a month to 6 weeks.
Right.
In our house, washed dishes together, planted a garden together, did all this stuff together. We basically assumed none of us had it, none of us were going to catch it.
Right.
if I had been an asymptomatic carrier, they should have gotten it. Neither of them have the antibodies, and neither of them have tested positive for COVID.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Do you think there's a concerted effort driven by politics to – because I made this prediction on Facebook a little while. I was like, the Democrats will not re-shut down the economy, but they will not allow it to open fully either until after the election. And I said, by January, this virus will mysteriously have dissipated. You'll start hearing things from the mainstream media and Democrats saying things like, well, the only way through it is through it. But that's not going to happen until after the election. Do you think that the reason why so many Democrat governors are hampering their states? I saw a statistic today that I think New York has 64 cases right now, 64 patients in a city of of millions of people, and they're still shut down. So the question is why, you know, and I have to ask, because it seems as though — I'm not saying this isn't a serious thing or a real thing. I'm just saying that there's a small percentage of the population that's very vulnerable to it. The rest of us, it pretty much manifests like a flu or the cold. And I feel like there is a concerted effort here to keep the economy limping, not shut it down all the way, because the Democrats know they can't restart it if they do, but just keep it limping until the election, regardless of the outcome. Is that a conspiracy theory?
If you want to trigger somebody on the left, use the words herd immunity.
Right.
Which used to be their favorite thing whenever you talked about whether, you know, you should get a vaccine or not. They would roll out this herd immunity argument.
Right.
Now they're saying herd immunity does not exist, is not a factor in COVID. But we can have all of the scientific hypotheses and theories we want, but ultimately the data doesn't lie.
Right.
And if you look at the curves, every state's reaching an asymptote.
Right.
It's
I'm Googling that word right now.
There was a
asymptote.
ASYMPTOTE.
Sounds like you know what it sounds like? It sounds like a fancy scientific name for a fanny pack. Asymptote. Come on, that's funny.
Yeah, that's funny. Okay. No.
Come on.
I just got it. I'm a little slow. Now I'm not even going to say the word.
All right, go ahead.
But you had this doubling rate, which is the natural progression of any virus that's unabated in a population of susceptible people.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You would expect a doubling rate until you get to a significant percent of the people who are no longer vulnerable, either because they've recovered or you know, in the 0.0001% of the cases passed away.
Right.
What we're seeing is that typical progression, and you're going to reach an asymptote, and where and
you're trying not to laugh. The Rock wearing his asymptote.
It's like Beavis and Butthead. I'm trying to pick a word.
Trying to be serious here.
I'm trying to pick a word that won't crack you up.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He said asymptote. Anyways.
I am Cornelio. All right, good. We're good. We're good. Right. I got it out of my system.
We're gonna reach that. Now, there are places the asymptote is going to be different for different states based on their population densities.
Right.
But here's the thing.
And some are more geographically rural. Like, if you look at Western states, everybody's jammed into one small spot and there's nothing, versus a state like Kentucky where even the rural areas are fairly populated.
Right, but I would say we're probably going to taper out at about 400 deaths per million.
Okay.
New York's at about 1,000 deaths per million.
Right.
Right now, Kentucky's at 200 deaths per million.
Okay.
That's how many deaths have happened per million people.
Okay.
In other words, one person in 5,000 in Kentucky has died of COVID.
Okay.
One in 5,000. And I think when we get to 1 in 2,000, this is going to be over in Kentucky. And in New York, it's 1 in 1,000 people have died. 1 out of 1,000 people in New York have died of COVID, and it's tapering off.
Right.
If you have masks and lockdowns and nobody can go to the gym and schools don't open, there's an asymptote for that. But the only way to stay there is to keep doing that forever.
Right. Right.
So right. You're eventually going to, and by the way, it's not even an asymptote. You keep rising.
Right.
If you look at Kentucky's curve, we haven't plateaued. Let me use that word, plateau.
Right.
If you, we haven't plateaued. California never plateaued. Texas, Florida, they didn't plateau. And so what you've seen in Texas and Florida is a steeper curve. But there was always still a curve going upward. And until we reach this natural level where a certain percent of the population gets it, we're either going to always be increasing in the number of cumulative deaths per million.
All right.
Or we're going to get to that eventual plateau.
Right. Yeah, I just think when we look back on this, I noticed that you adeptly didn't answer my question, though.
What
if you think that that the overreaction is on purpose.
Oh, I think they're taking advantage of it.
Yeah. But maybe it's something that it's not being controlled because it's out of control.
It's a reason to do things they've wanted to do for
right.
a long time.
Yeah, never let a crisis go to waste kind of thing.
It's global yep. warming and fast forward.
Yeah, that's a great point. Let's talk about Edward Snowden.
Yes.
That's actually the reason I wanted to get you on
that's
here.
That's right.
I am fascinated with this topic, privacy. You and I go way back on this issue. You've been on my show many, many times talking about protecting privacy. You have been as principled a congressman on protecting people's liberties and privacy as any that exist. I'd say you, Rand Paul, Democrat Ron Wyden from Oregon. I don't know who else. Maybe Justin Amash. Anybody else that you can think of that have been stalwart on this issue that you want to throw in there? It's not very many, you know, that have really cared about this. But anyway, you tweeted the other day that towards President Trump, you said, hey, let's pardon Edward Snowden. And then within 24 hours or so, we get word that the president is considering pardoning Edward Snowden. Now, what's funny about this is the same president who said you should be run out of the Republican Party not too long ago because you went against him on something. And now he's listening to you again, which is fascinating. What were you thinking when you did that?
Well, Trump had mused about it earlier, and nobody had reported on it too much.
Right.
So I sought to amplify it. And
right.
so I said Trump should pardon Snowden. and because sometimes he floats, he floats these little trial balloons.
Yeah.
And then if it picks up steam,
he goes for it. Right.
And I do know he's concerned about the libertarian vote.
Okay.
Like, this is something he's talked about.
Yeah, we've had Dr. Joe Jorgensen on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Just so you know, she's a very nice lady, very intelligent. I liked her a lot. Didn't agree with everything she said. Mm-hmm. I lean libertarian, as do you, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I can understand why he would be concerned about that this time around.
So he floated the idea.
Right.
I jumped on it. I said he should do it. I think it's got, you know, 10 or 20,000. It was one of those tweets that blew up.
Right.
And then he commented on it again and in a more formal setting and said he was considering it. And Rand Paul and Justin Amash amplified that sentiment. And then Liz Cheney came out against it.
Of course, she comes out against liberty.
Which means you're probably on the right side.
Right.
If she's against it and you're for it.
Right.
Or vice versa. Like the war, keep going on the wars. She's for that.
Right.
And we're against that. Anyways, so I think it has some legs. By the way, you know, when you said who's strong on this issue, after Edward Snowden released that information, Zoe Lofgren, who's a Democrat from California, and I teamed up on this privacy issue, and three times we offered an amendment to fix this.
Right.
The amendment would have done two things. It would have required the government to get a warrant on American citizens,
right,
a real warrant, if you want to collect their information. Wouldn't have stopped them from doing anything. You just got to have a warrant. And also, Justin Amash had a big debate and a fight about the metadata. But this was about the Zoe Lofgren Massey, Thomas Massey amendment was about the actual information, which they're also collecting.
Right.
So we said, you got to have a warrant for that. And also, we were going to make it illegal for the federal government to force tech companies to put backdoors in their products that allow the government to easy access to all of your information.
Right.
And by the way, they also compromise your security. If there's a backdoor, if there's a way to pick every lock on every piece of software, and then this software is mandated by, let's say, election officials, then you've made your own system brittle or vulnerable to hacking. So anyways, twice we got that amendment passed. Twice they stripped it out of the final appropriations language. And then the third time we went to pass it, it failed because there had just been sort of I don't even know what politically correct word there
right.
is, but some people inspired by Islamic terrorism had done an attack in California.
Right.
Remember, like, ISIS started coming on. You had these terrorist attacks in the United States that were motivated by radical Islamists. And there was the Pulse nightclub shooting, which had some nexus.
Right.
And so everybody, like the majority of the population and majority of the Congress, went from being for privacy to now,
right,
we don't really need privacy.
Right.
And so our amendment failed, and that sort of stalled in Congress.
Wow.
But I think there's a renewed sense of importance for maintaining our privacy and stopping all of this unconstitutional spying. By the way, Liz Cheney said Edward Snowden is a traitor. I think what he did was a service to our country. He exposed Clapper, who lied and then admitted he lied. See, here's how the intelligence community gets away with this, Leland. They cover their asymptotes.
That's good. I like that.
What they do, there are like eight people in Congress that can know the secrets. And so if they're doing something that would otherwise be illegal or unconstitutional, they inform a small subset of Congress, the Liz Cheney types,
right,
yeah, about what's actually going on, and then they keep everybody else in the dark,
right?
And that is not when your only elected official in Congress can't know what the government is doing to you. That's bad,
right? Right.
And that was that all happened, by the way, under Bush and Obama administrations.
So I was going to ask you, because I was on the fence for a long time. I was like, I don't know whether Edward Snowden is a traitor or a patriot, but I know what he did, and I'm glad he did it. The more I've looked at the facts of the case, he was very careful that certain, unlike, and this is something I've never understood about the Democrats' hypocrisy on this, because, well, I say Democrats, there's a lot of Democrats that are standing with you, but I mean specifically the elite in Washington, whether they're Republican or Democrat, there's a huge hypocrisy on this, because the left is always, like with Chelsea Manning, whose intel dump led directly to the deaths of many, many Americans in the theater of war. Now, were there some things in that dump of data that it was good that the public know? Yeah. But there was no carefulness to protect, you know, brothers in arms, so to speak. Whereas Snowden was adamant that the people in the media that he gave this to, that they're only use certain types of programs because he didn't want to compromise any type of ongoing operation or any type of thing that was keeping America safe. Now, maybe that's just Oliver Stone's retelling of the story. But from what I've read as well, it seems to be that was the case. So he was careful to essentially only expose what he needed to let Americans know what was happening.
Well, there are some people who say he wasn't careful enough. And so that's their, like, and I don't have enough facts to dispute it.
Well, but how can you be careful enough, though, when what is being done is so egregious?
Well, that's the thing.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, I mean, there's a point at which you still, even if what the government is doing is keeping us safe, what they're doing is so wrong and so in violation of who we are that you actually do have to expose.
Well, the people who are saying that he released too much and that the things he released caused people to lose their lives or made America less safe are the same people who lied to us about it going on.
Correct.
They're the exact same people.
Right.
So what credibility do they have? Now, here's the other thing. Some people say, well, he didn't follow the whistleblower standards, that, you know, there's a right way to do this and a wrong way, and he did it the wrong way. Well, guess what? He was not a government employee.
Right.
And if you read the letter of the law, and trust me, they're going to put you in prison, they are going to follow the letter of the law if it works to the prosecutor's advantage. There was no way for a contractor to be a whistleblower. The whistleblower statutes are all written for government employees.
Right.
And most a lot of this stuff is done outside. A lot of it's done by contractors, right?
Right.
We outsource so much, and frankly, the most competent people are probably not working for the government because the salaries are capped and whatever. You're going to go work for a contractor because there's no cap on the salary and they can pay you what you're worth.
It's a sneaky
right.
way.
Right, and then the government hires the consultants. Anyways, in fact, you can go back and watch. In the last year, we had a hearing with the IGs there. And I narrowed in on this with the Inspector General for the intelligence community. I asked him point blank, and another one of the IGs, Horowitz, I asked them point blank if the statutes, because they've changed the statutes since Snowden,
right.
Also the whistleblower right. statutes. But I said, do the current statutes cover contractors? And did they cover them at the time when Edward Snowden did his release?
Right.
They're the ones who should know this down cold, right? They're the IGs.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know.
Wow.
They did not know. If there's still ambiguity, then if you're Edward Snowden, how are you going to sort it out? If the IG
right.
for this, who's in charge of all this whistleblowing, doesn't know, how is Edward Snowden going to know?
Yeah.
So we need to, this was the other thing that I said in my tweet. I said, we need to clarify whistleblower statutes / protections for contractors, because so much of our intelligence is privy to contractors or known by contractors right. or done by contractors.
The other thing is that there were a couple of prominent whistleblowers from the NSA prior that were actually government employees prior to Snowden mm-hmm. coming forward, and their lives got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't matter what the whistleblower standards were. The government was going to destroy you. And, you know, a perfect example of that, it doesn't matter who you work for. You know, Cheryl Atkinson was an award-winning CBS reporter. She got a little too close to Fast and Furious, and her career was completely destroyed. You know, what's his name? Rosen from Fox News,
mm-hmm.
working on the same story. Almost thrown in jail mm-hmm. as a result of that. So, and this was during the Obama administration. Do you think Trump is Snowden's last best hope? Because at some point, Russia is going to be like, you know, Russia's like a cat with a half-dead mouse with Snowden right now. The only reason they even, because it's so ironic with them, like, keep giving him refuge, because they're like the least, you know, in favor of personal privacy country in the world besides China. But they know it's a thorn in our side. That's the only reason they're even letting him live. Biden and his top cop, you know, Harris aren't going to let this guy go. So is this his last best chance to come home?
Probably.
Or even live, to be honest with you.
Well, since you mentioned Trump and you know, and Biden and Kamala Harris, I think, and by the way, I have advocated for Snowden with somebody in the White House who's not the president.
Okay.
Like, people say, why are you just tweeting this? Why don't you actually do something? Okay.
You have.
Because I can't put that on Twitter.
Right.
Okay. And I can't really talk about the podcast. But I think, back to how this involves Trump and Biden, I think it would be a power play on Trump's part politically.
Right.
We've just spent a lot of time talking about why it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And by the way, if somebody sees somebody's life destroyed for being a whistleblower, then they're not going to be a whistleblower.
Exactly.
And so that's why it's bigger than Snowden.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And people, you know, if Snowden, if there's a better way to do it, okay, let's define that in statute and then let's give Snowden a pass or, you know, some kind of pardon.
Right.
Or lighter sentence, whatever it is, something. But what would happen, so we've established it's the right thing to do, but let's talk about politically. Politically, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris would have to come out against it.
Right.
And then they would alienate probably 30 or 40% of their base.
Right. Because there's a lot of Democrats who are not the hateful,
that's right,
crazy, rabid people that are being highlighted and featured in the news and that run the party. They're normal people who lean to the left politically, but they like their privacy just like we do.
Right. Yeah. The ACLU, by the way, this is not a right-wing issue to pardon Snowden.
Right.
This is a bipartisan issue, and you've got folks on the left who are in favor of it. So he would if Biden came out against it,
right?
He should at least have to comment on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. No doubt. And that's an opportunity for a gaffe right there.
we should bring
Snowden home from China. So, yeah, I'm being told that we got to wrap it up because you've got other things going on today. But I appreciate you taking a bunch of time out of your schedule today to talk. Gosh, we talked off the grid farming. We talked a coronavirus, and then Snowden. That's pretty cool.
Growing up. In my case, living in mobile homes. Which,
yeah.
By the way, let me be clear about something. Here in the county where I live,
right,
the people that work hard and provide for their own housing, a lot of them live in mobile homes.
Right.
And then the people on government assistance, and some of them are there by no fault of their own, but some of them are taking advantage of the situation. They live in, you know, 2x6 framed homes.
Right.
Like, I am a big fan of mobile homes. I'm a big fan of tiny houses, but I'm a big fan of mobile homes. They're the original self-sufficient tiny house.
Right.
Where if you couldn't afford a house or the bank wouldn't give you the capital to buy a house,
yep,
you could go out and you could give your family a warm, safe place to live.
Yep.
comfortable, and that's what a lot of people in Kentucky do. So I want to make sure that people know I don't look at them pejoratively.
Right. No, and same for me. I mean, it's not as comfortable as the place I live right now, but I certainly appreciated every minute of it, and it was, you know, kept me cool in the summer and warm in the winter. So,
mm-hmm. And dry all
yeah,
the time.
Exactly. So, listen, great talking to you again. Thanks so much. Chances that you think Snowden gets pardoned, what do you think?
Pardoned or a more lenient sentence, I would put, before Trump leaves, I'd put it 33%.
Wow. All right. Hey, have a great day, sir. It's good talking
to
you.
Thanks, Leland.
All right.
Bye-bye.
That is Congressman Thomas Massey here on the podcast. Love that guy. Stalwart defender of freedom and liberty. And that was a fun conversation. Hey, if you want to share it with your friends, it's a free podcast. Just go to iHeartRadio and search The Disruption Zone. Also on Apple Podcasts and on Google Play. We're there and we're free for everyone. Thanks to JP Web Design for their help with the website. Thank you to Dynamics Productions in Lexington, Kentucky for their help with the program. And as always, thank you to my co-host and co-executive producer, Cameron Mills. I am Leland Conway. Follow me on Twitter at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption and on Instagram at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone.